Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Make some noise if you hear me. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and it's actually not Drew, Richard, and Ezra. It's Leah Hextall, Dave Manuk, and Ezra. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock and Drew Mandel are in Minneapolis.
Of course they are.
They're in Minneapolis. You know, why stay in Winnipeg and do your own radio show that you do every week when you could watch a Jays game in Minneapolis? We have an absolutely huge show here today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We've actually got 5 guests for the first time ever, I believe. And we're going to have Chris Mason, goaltender for the Atlanta Thrashers, on today at 11:30. To kind of get a player's perspective, really, on, you know, the ownership situation in Atlanta. You know, rumors have been flying around that the Atlanta Thrashers might relocate to a certain city. And, you know, we've had writers on, we've had broadcasters on addressing the topic, but we're really lucky that Chris is going to come on the show and talk to us. And so, as I mentioned, we've got 5 guests coming up today. At 9:45, Ari Baum-Cohn, Illegal Curve gambling expert, is going to join us to handicap the odds for the conference finals and the Stanley Cup finals, and basically talk to us about who he's going to put money on for the Stanley Cup finals. At 10 o'clock, top of the hour, Winnipeg Free Press sports reporter Tim Campbell is going to join us to talk about the Glendale City Council meeting that took place on Tuesday night, and also address some of the, Atlanta Thrashers ownership news and issues. 10:30, Darren Ford, JetsOwner.com founder, is going to join us, and he's going to talk to us about, basically how his hope for an NHL team coming back to Winnipeg, 7 years ago, has basically turned into, it could turn into reality, and we're going to talk to him about that. And our final guest, our 5th guest, will be at 11 o'clock. Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com will join us to talk about different stats as it relates to the playoffs. And we have questions prepared for him. He comes on our show, the second Saturday of every month. So without further ado, that was a long billboard. I just learned that from Leah. She told me that's what it's called when you introduce all your guests. So Leah, Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ezzy.
Thanks, Ez.
How are you guys doing today?
Good to be back on IC.
This is early, I gotta say.
It is early.
When I come in, it's the 11 o'clock hour. This is early.
It is very early. I actually just left the Palomino like 4 hours ago.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
With a cougar print all over your back.
I actually went to bed really early yesterday. I started a job about 2 months ago. It's a 9-to-5 job.
Well, you became a big boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finally, at 28 years old, I've decided to get a real job. And I actually go to bed usually at 10 now. So I actually, 2 nights ago, I mean, this is kind of going to, my hockey credo is going to go down a little bit, but I actually had to go to bed for the third period of the Sharks Wings
game seven.
Obviously, I watched the third period on PVR, but what do you think about that, Dave? Because I used to go to bed at 4 in the morning.
I know my 2 a.m. BBM stew now go unanswered. It's very unfulfilling, actually.
Okay, guys, we're going to start off the show today. And by the way, we want everyone out there listening to log on to Twitter, add us at Illegal Curve, and tweet at us. We're going to try to read tweets during the show. As we mentioned, we've got 5 guests coming up. First guest, 9:45. But we're going to try to read tweets all throughout the show. So add us, and we'll try to read your tweets. You can tweet about anything, and we'll get it on. But basically, we're going to start off by recapping the second round a little bit, and then we'll get into previewing the third round here. So it ended on Thursday night. We had Game 7 between the Red Wings and Sharks. The Sharks obviously won 3-2. What were you guys' thoughts on that series?
I thought it was phenomenal. I as I accurately predicted on IC, that it would go 7 games and that the Sharks would win, much to the chagrin of everyone else who went with the Wings. But I thought it was great. I thought that the Sharks played really well. And, you just couldn't expect. When they were up 3-0, I knew Detroit wasn't going out without a fight. Like, I knew that Detroit was coming back. I didn't think that they would come back actually and win 3 games in a row and force a Game 7, but I thought it would at least get to Game 6.
I was just happy that San Jose showed up in Game 7. you know, they really let that one slip away, in my opinion, and it's just going to be a true test to what they do now continuing on, and hopefully they took a lesson from that. But Game 7, they were the San Jose Sharks team that they can be. They dominated the puck. They were crisp in their own end. There was no little turnovers, whereas you look at Detroit, there was a few turnovers that were just mental mistakes, and those obviously come after you beat a team three times in a row. The amount of pressure that they were facing for those three games, and you just knew that they weren't going to be able to do it again. You knew that that Game 7 was going to, I think, San Jose before it even the puck dropped, because to beat a team four straight, there's a reason that only three teams in NHL history have done it. It is just so mentally draining, not even so much the physicality of it. It's just the mental part of it, not making a single mistake, because as we saw, every game was decided by one goal except for one of them. So, I mean, it was one of those series that the first mistake was going to be dependent on who's going to win that game and who's going to lose that game.
I really thought it was fitting that, you know, Patrick Marleau ended up getting the game winner. You know, everyone that was watching, you know, the NHL on TV saw, you know, Jeremy Roenick's comments. I'd like to get your guys' thoughts on that, because, you know, Jeremy Roenick, I'm a big fan of his. I really liked him as a hockey player. And I like his style as a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. He says things that maybe other people aren't willing to say. And I think, you know, in the media sometimes that's good. But, you know, Jeremy Roenick took a lot of heat for basically calling Patrick Marleau gutless. And, you know, I guess he proved him wrong, so to speak. But what did you guys think about those comments?
Well, he didn't basically call him gutless. He just flat out called him gutless. And this is a former teammate, which really says something. Obviously, Roenick felt that he had to take that stand. I don't really know if that's it. I would perhaps say ghost-like. I don't know if gutless is the right term. But Patrick Marleau, is this a surprise to anyone that he's being spotty in the playoffs? This isn't anything new. I mean, we've seen them not be consistent playoff performers, San Jose, the entire team. Joe Thornton has been that back and forth and finally has shown up this playoffs. Last playoffs, Patrick Marleau had a stronger playoffs than, say, Joe Thornton did. This year, he's struggling. And the fact of the matter is he is a skilled player. He's not responding. There's something going on. But the fact that he did score a big goal, it's, you know, like they say, a goal is a goal. And that was a huge one. And it clinched it. And it put them into the Western Conference Finals. So whether he's gutless or not, he scored perhaps the biggest goal of the series.
Well, it's similar to almost like Crosby's goal in the Olympics. You know, like realistically, people for the... When I was watching the Olympics, I was thinking, like, where's Crosby been? You know what I mean? Like, obviously he had a couple good games early, but I didn't think down the stretch that he was that phenomenal. And I said to my cousin, I said, look, the key thing that he did was score that goal. Like, the best thing ever was the fact that the States sent it to overtime, because it allowed Crosby to score the golden goal, right? And similar with Marleau, all you going to think about is the fact that he got that critical goal, you know, to put him up 3-1 in the game, and then, of course, it turned out to be the eventual game winner. But going back to Jeremy Roenick's comments, I like his comments. I think, like, you know how they say Manny being Manny? Well, I like Jeremy being Jeremy. I think the fact that he's not vanilla, that he's not like everybody else just reading off a teleprompter, that he's actually giving you his opinion, and it's the reason, you know,
It might not necessarily be right, but at least he's giving you his opinion.
And that's what he's there for. Yeah. That's what he's supposed to be doing.
Exactly. And, you know, I wrote a column about this, you know, a couple years ago on Illegal Curve, because I said that that's the thing that hockey's missing. Because I would watch basketball.
Or Don Cherry's.
No, and it's true. Like, when I was down in the States, I watched basketball, and I wasn't ever a big basketball fan, but I used to watch just to watch Charles Barkley.
Yep.
Because
yeah.
I loved Charles Barkley, and I thought he had so much personality that he made watching a sport I wasn't a huge fan of interesting. And similarly, Jeremy Roenick is a guy who's got a lot of personality. Whether you like him or hate him, he's got a ton of personality. And he's good for the game. He's absolutely good for the game.
You know, Liam mentioned that, you know, or were we surprised that, you know, Marleau, he ended up only having, that was his only point.
Yeah,
he only had one
series.
Point in seven games, which is obviously not what you expect out of one of your top players. But
especially when you have him on your fantasy team.
I thought it was, you know, very telling that he basically in the media didn't downplayed it and, you know, got it going. But as far as Marlowe's on-ice performance, A lot of problems I've had with the San Jose Sharks in the past is that I feel that their leaders are really not, they don't vocally take over that dressing room, and that's always kind of been what they've said in San Jose, is that they have all the skill in the world, the Heatleys, the Thorntons, the Marleaus. These guys are obviously, they won two of them won gold in 2010 in Vancouver, but the thing has always been that they maybe aren't as, they don't have the passion or the intensity.
They don't have someone to do the war cry in the room.
Right.
And that might be something that, obviously, that's not their fault. That's up top. You got to bring in those key role guys who right. are going to say something. But the other thing I want to say about Marlowe is, let's remember, we are only halfway through the playoffs. Right. We got two more rounds here mm-hmm. if they're going to go all the way. Right. There's lots of time for players to stand up. Let's remember, people were saying that Ryan Kesler was ghost-like in the first series against right. Chicago, and now all of a sudden he's
That's a
Conn Smythe candidate.
Yep.
There was
That's
lots really of time for certain players who maybe haven't shot up their game to do so through the rest of it. And perhaps this goal was something that Patty Marlowe needed. Perhaps it will spark him. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it is a team.
Yeah.
And if one player isn't playing well, the other ones have to pick it up. And you also have to remember, there are other things going on besides just putting the puck in the net. And you have to look at what players do all around.
And further to that point, the Sedins haven't exactly been Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux, and Vancouver seems to be still the odds-on favorite to win the Stanley Cup. So
well,
you have to think that
Pavelski
those guys get
Joe should thank Patrick Marlowe for having a bad playoffs because it's going to help him make more money.
No, but if you if you actually look at it, the rest of the Sharks have really stepped it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, Klo's been phenomenal.
Couture's been great.
Yeah. Logan Couture had
Pavelski,
a huge goal the other day.
Huge goals when needed.
Yeah, absolutely. So all these.
And Big Joe, finally, Big Joe having a whale.
You know what? Honestly, he's been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like just watching him skate, I actually said to I was talking to someone and we were watching the game, and I said, "What's going on with Heatley? He's been terrible." And then right after that, he didn't score. They originally said it was him, but it was I think it was Logan Couture who got the goal or.
Healy's been floating. Almost have to wonder if he's still hurt from
I think
hit.
He must be hurt. I honestly do, because he's got no speed. Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely none. Like,
well, Cronwall nailed him, so.
Yeah, no, but I mean, yeah. He was Cronwalled, as they say.
Yeah.
You guys, you know I'm still here, right?
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to leave it at that just for now, and we are going to go to break.
Good
and
series,
then when we
though.
Come back, we're going to continue to recap the second round, and then we're going to start to preview the third round, and then later on this hour, we're going to give our predictions. Leah's going to give us her predictions. Dave's going to give us his predictions. Dave, once again, if you weren't listening about 10 minutes ago, Dave actually went 4-for-4 in his predictions in the second round and got two series exactly right, whereas I don't think any of us got any of the series right. Maybe one of us, but...
Oh, okay. Richard got Vancouver as well.
We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to continue to talk about the second round. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive. They make the car you drive, drive forever.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. My name is Ezra. I'm joined by Dave Minuk on my right and Leah Hextall on my left, filling in for Drew and Richard, who are somewhere in Minneapolis. Who cares?
I'm sitting in Richie's chair, and I feel like the knowledge is surging through me.
It's funny. The first time that, long story short, the first time we approached sports radio about getting a show here, Chris Brook looked at Richard and said, "You always look like you're thinking."
He's so pensive. It's the glasses.
Especially when Richie, we were just talking about this. Richie's obviously a lawyer, and we were talking about this. And especially when Richie's got his suit on and his glasses. And,
I'm at that point.
I always think he's going to subpoena me or something. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, so welcome back to the show. We're about 15 minutes in, and I think we have breaking news to report.
And now, breaking news.
Breaking news, Patrick Marlowe did in fact win a gold medal, Ezra. So when you said that Thornton and Heatley won gold medals, you said two of three, which of course Leah said it was actually four because
Danny Boyle.
So. Let's not forget about the puck-moving defenseman there.
There is breaking news, Ezra. Patrick Marlowe did in fact win a gold medal with Team
15
Canada.
Minutes we made it without our first segment. We didn't even get through without a mistake.
Yeah. I apologize, Leah. I know you were upset that I said that, and I was
not upset at all. I just don't want you to sound dumb.
Oh. Well, you obviously haven't listened to the show before because I pretty much sound dumb 24 hours a day or 3 hours. Okay, so let's continue recapping the second round. Mm-hmm. We were talking in the previous segment, the opening segment, about San Jose and Detroit. So let's continue in the Western Conference and just recap briefly the Vancouver-Nashville series. I think a lot of people were surprised that Vancouver actually finished off Nashville in six when it was looking like Nashville had some of the momentum and they were going to take Vancouver to seven games. So, guys, I'd like to get your thoughts on this series. We were talking a little bit about Ryan Kesler. I think he became almost the story in that series.
11 points in the series.
He became the story.
Huge.
And I don't think anyone right now is going to dispute that that he's been the best player in the playoffs so far.
Oh, okay. Not the best player, but I would dispute that he's a story. I would say that Kevin Bieksa is the story. With his
and why is that, Dave?
Shot. That was the best segment of, from the second round.
If you haven't seen that clip, go on YouTube.
I haven't seen that.
You might want to go to LegalCurve.com and check it out.
Remus actually tweeted the video a couple times.
It was Scott Oak interviewing Bieksa, right?
But the craziest part about it was that he did it in the middle, in the second intermission. So he's like, what do you guys need to do to get more? How are you going to win the game? Like, how are you going to keep the momentum going? And then he went and did his, you know, the shots. And I lost it because I was like, this is a live interview. Like,
that's fantastic.
I actually love that guy. Like, his personality is phenomenal.
Well, going back to personalities, I mean, you know, we all, and Leah, obviously, you know, you interview people for a living.
Yes.
And you know this. So a lot of times you'll interview hockey players, and this is at any level. You're going to get very straightforward answers where the guy's not he's just answering the questions.
The most reserved answers you're ever going to get out of any sport come from hockey players, and that's why you see Kevin's face all over the media all the time, whether he's playing or not. You want to interview him because he's going to give you some gold.
Yep.
He's going to talk. That's the thing. And he's going to say things that are a little bit off the map, but still never throwing anybody under the bus. Yep. But he will address problems when need be, and he also will stand up for his teammates on any given day if you go after them as well. He was great here when he was here in Manitoba. Mm-hmm. So, and he's, you know, obviously still got the media magic up top.
No question.
So, guys, in your opinion, what was the turning point in that series? Because, you know, Nashville battled hard. Pecorine was obviously, you know, sensational. We know why he's been, you know, a Vezina Trophy candidate, right? Is he not? I think he is. If he isn't, he should have been. He might be up there. now we're checking that because anytime, Leah. By the way, anytime I'm responsible for the accuracy of information, it's usually not me.
And Pekka,
checks it.
I think
Longo,
Tim Thomas, and Pekka. Yeah, you got it.
So what did you think was the what did you like about that series, and where did you think it the momentum kind of swung?
You know, honestly, I didn't like a whole heck of a lot about this series as a fan. I was extremely bored watching it, and that has a lot to do with the way in which Nashville plays hockey. But, you know, that's the way that they've won throughout the season, so you can't discount that. I don't really know if there was necessarily... I think the turning point for me was that the fact after going 7 games and blowing that 3-0 lead for the Canucks against Chicago, I thought that after they got the first 2 wins, I felt like Vancouver started to believe again. They started to believe within themselves. They weren't as scattered as they were. Kessler stood up, and the rest of the team just kind of jumped on his back and started to go.
Right.
The other thing, too, is you saw Luongo's confidence reemerge. Because let's face it, the guy gives up weird goals at bad times. He's been doing it his entire career. And even though they might be 1-0 games or whatnot, you saw the confidence of this team just kind of come together. And I think they're going into the Western Conference Final just really believing that it's theirs.
Do either of you guys think that the Vancouver Canucks can beat the San Jose Sharks without the Sedins playing, you know, a lot better than they have played?
I think this is where the deficiency of the Sedins not producing will show up against San Jose. I think they need to be there and start putting the puck in the net because San Jose is going to roll.
You know, if you look at stats, and I mean, obviously that's what everyone does, the Sedins aren't, I mean, they're not, it's not like they haven't gotten any points. They've gotten some points, but... Like, you know, speaking to what you were talking about earlier, Leah, I would have to agree completely that Ryan Kessler, even though he wasn't the dominant player in the first round, he basically was, not only did he carry his line and the team in the play, he was the best player on the ice. And, you know, the way he has changed into a player, he keeps, you know, you hear a lot about guys have to elevate their games. A lot of, you know, analysts will say that, and it's true. I mean, the Sedins will have to elevate their games. But that's kind of, you know, it, generally speaking, I think people don't realize that that's incremental. That can be small things. Kessler looks like he has just motivated himself to really take control of the series. And I think Kessler, if it's dating back to, you know, last year in the Olympics when he kind of, you know, was calling out Luongo and all that. Obviously, you can't call out Luongo because they're on the same team. But it looks like Kessler has just... You know, himself has decided, I'm going to do everything I can to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And the question, though, is a guy like Kessler can elevate his game. He knows what it takes.
Yep.
I don't know if the Sedins can do it. They are natural talents, and it just seems to me that a guy like Kessler, when he struggles, he finds a way to get better. The Sedins, I'm not sure. I don't know if they have that grasp because it's always come so naturally. They've never had to really work on that.
I didn't realize we had Don Cherry in the studio with us, not Leah Hextall. But, no, you know what? The Sedins definitely need to do something. Like, there's no question about it.
Because they do this every year in the playoffs. Come on.
Yeah, no, but again, like you guys have both said, you can kind of almost take a series off. You know what I mean? Or two, because right now, like, the only
You can't take the conference finals off.
No.
You can't take the conference, well, especially not, again, it's the team like San Jose.
The depth is going to come into play.
Yeah, because San Jose's forwards are just so talented, and, like, you need the Sedins to be performing at a high level. But, like, if you ask me, probably the most significant thing about the Nashville-Vancouver series was most likely the Green Men.
Oh, jeez.
Those guys, like, it was unbelievable. Well, the fact is that they get under everybody's skin. It's actually hilarious. But apparently, when they went to Nashville, they were actually treated like gold. It was unbelievable.
But they were sitting, weren't they sitting way back
in that bad seat?
Yeah,
they didn't have...
How they weren't so flamboyant when they're not right by the glass there and the camera's on them. They're just sitting there like little mules in the chairs like this.
But what did you think of the Green Men? Because I got into an argument with someone about this. The Green Men actually went to Nashville and we're mocking Mike Fisher with the Carrie Underwood sign. Or was that in Vancouver?
No, that was in Vancouver.
It was in Vancouver. They were right by the glass.
I wanted to get your take on that because I got into argument with someone, and I was in Vancouver last year, and I was loving the Green Men, and I thought they were hilarious. But I got into an argument with someone who will remain anonymous. He'll be a quote-unquote source, if you will, an unnamed source. He thought that they went over the top, and once they started making fun of a player's wife, they went too far. What do you think of those guys? Are you a fan of those guys?
You know what?
Or do they take it too far?
I don't mind them, but right now I'm getting annoyed of them because they're in the media. They're doing stories of them.
Yep.
I just think, go away.
You know Dave is one of the Green guys, right?
Yeah. Well, apparently.
Yeah. I look great in a giant leotard.
And this is the other thing.
Unintended,
I mean,
leotard?
It's not... Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's not a good look.
Well,
I don't like looking directly at them because it scares me a little bit. If you look at them and catch them at a certain angle, it's not pleasing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not pleasing.
But the thing I like, though, was the fact that Mike Fisher was down. Like, he was like, he basically said, had it not been the playoffs, he would have been more interactive with those guys. Like, he actually was, because he said it was funny. Like, he legitimately was.
Well,
like,
she's in a Canucks outfit.
Yeah.
It's not like they're doing something.
Where they won me was when they had Vince Vaughn in the Canucks jersey, like with his thumbs up.
I think it's unbelievable. I think it's great. And I my argument was, as long as those guys aren't saying anything derogatory.
Yes, absolutely.
Like the Carrie Underwood thing, maybe a little bit far, but it's not like they
she's
were doing anything with it. They just had a picture
Canucks
of her.
Jersey.
They
just
had a picture of her. And I mean, yeah, I guess, you know,
they weren't doing anything derogatory
to the cutout. Yeah, the cutout.
They were stroking her hair, I think.
Yeah.
But that's the extent.
There was no cutout fouls.
Yeah.
You should take it as a compliment. You got a hot wife.
That's right.
You know?
Okay, guys, we're going to leave the Green Men talk at that. And when we come back...
See, that's the problem.
We're going to continue to preview the... No, you know what? We're going to do a little bit more recapping. But we're going to get more into our previewing, and we're actually going to give our predictions. So we're going to begin previewing Vancouver we'll actually continue previewing Vancouver San Jose. So we'll be back in about 3 minutes' time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Can you possibly not be in a good mood with that song playing?
See, that's what we need. Someone who has a little bit of tune.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's clearly none of us do.
We have no tune.
I've auto-tuned.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Just a reminder that Michael Remus usually mans the R desk here. He's actually taking a class, but he is online, so you can listen to our show on www.illegalcurve.com, and you can actually join Michael Remus. He tweeted us. And he is doing a chat, so you can tweet him at Illegal Curve. He's handling the Illegal Curve chat. And just a reminder, our first guest is going to be coming up at 9:45. We're going to have Illegal Curve gambling correspondent Ari Baum-Cohn on at 9:45. At 10 o'clock, we've got Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press coming up. 10:30, return of the, pardon me, not return of the Jets. JetsOwner.com founder Darren Ford at 10:30, 11 o'clock, Behind the Net Hockey's Gabe Desjardins, and then the interview that the universe is waiting for. Atlanta Thrashers goaltender Chris Mason is coming up at 11:30.
Unless you're Drew Mandel, and then it's the Univorce.
The Univorce.
That's right.
And, yeah, I guess, well, and Drew's, you know, the interview he's probably looking forward to is the, if he could somehow, I think if Drew could interview himself, that would be, you know, if Drew could somehow interview himself as, you know, and make that somehow not insane, I think he would love that.
Or narcissistic.
Yeah. Okay, guys, let's continue previewing the third round. You know, we were talking a little bit about the Vancouver-San Jose series. Let's switch over to Boston-Tampa, because it seems like Boston-Tampa haven't played in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
It seems like those series were over. So let's talk about that series, because I think that, you know, Boston, a lot of people expected them to get there, and Tampa Bay maybe not so much. They swept Washington quite easily, Dave. And, you know, this series, when you look at it, you've got two really good goaltenders, two veteran goaltenders. You've got two teams that can, you know, that can beat you with a lot of different players. This isn't you know, your typical one-line team. These teams can roll out multiple lines. Who do you like in the series? Or maybe just talk about what you like about the way these teams have played, you know, in the first two rounds.
I think it begins and ends with goaltending. I think that, and I mean, it's remarkable because, I mean, Tim Thomas is in his late 30s, and you've got Dwayne Rolison is in his early 40s. And you've got these, and that, we'll be talking to Chris Mason about that because I'm interested to see his opinion about
78 with their ages combined.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
41 okay. and 37. Okay, yeah.
That's the same age as Drew Mandel. Yeah. 78.
Oldest dueling tenders in the NHL for about 30 years, they say.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, exactly. And so, like, you've got, like, I think it's just going to begin and end with those guys because I think they're playing really, really well. And so, and then there's interesting stories about how Rolison bumped Tim Thomas to end up playing in the University of Vermont, I believe, because Rolison was the starting goalie at, was it New Hampshire? No,
I think it was UMass.
Yeah, it was UMass. That's right. That's right. And so, because Rolison was a starting goaltender at UMass, Thomas went to Vermont. I believe the University of Vermont.
It was the University of Vermont because.
Yeah, that's right.
Marty St. Louis and Tim Thomas are good friends,
mm-hmm.
and Marty St. Louis, before he, you know, I think he was drafted by Calgary, wasn't he originally? He also played for the University of Vermont, so, you know, those guys are going to be playing each other, but I'd have to agree with you. I mean, you wouldn't think that your strength would be in goal when you're talking about Tampa, but, you know, we always like to mention stats on the show, Leah, and we were talking about stats. Look at Dwayne Rolison's stats mm-hmm. right now. He's leading. His numbers are amazing, and I mean, you could
say top goalie in the league right now.
You could say, okay, you know, well, you know, you could make reasons to justify why he isn't really playing that good. But they just swept the Washington Capitals. This isn't exactly, you know, an offensively starved team. They were maybe, you know, towards the end of the season, but he shut whatever you want to say. He shut down the likes of Ovechkin, Semin, Backstrom, and all those guys. So mm-hmm. Tampa Bay might be more of a complete team than you think. Even though, you know, everyone thinks of Tampa Bay as they're going to have to win with the Stamkos St. Louis Downey line, right?
And that right there in itself is not the case right now because, as we've seen, the line of Bergenheim's line,
yep.
along with Downey and Dominic Moore, they have been unbelievable. Bergenheim has 6 goals in 6 games. Which is unreal. So yep. they're getting that secondary scoring and also getting it when they need it. And then on top of that, you have, like you said, the Vinny LeCavaliers, the Martin St. Louis, and the Steven Stamkos rolling as well. But I also think, I know that you guys are talking about goaltending, I think that this one's going to be a big special teams battle, and Boston's really going to have to pull up their socks here because Tampa's power play is lights out, absolutely lights out. And the Bruins' PK, not operating too bad, but the Bruins' power play has nothing going. 5.4 success rate right now in the playoffs.
I think they have, what, is it like 1 goal in 30 attempts or something like
that? Well, their first goal came against Philly there. Yeah. Zdeno Chara scoring it on the power play.
It was a 5-on-3, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was so insane that it took them that
really
long.
Count.
Yeah.
But, I mean, well, we're going to have Gabe Desjardins behind the net on at 11 o'clock, and we're going to ask him a little bit about this. But Patrice Bergeron...
That's huge.
Is out of the lineup,
huge
okay?
Huge loss.
And that is really difficult when you consider that Mark Savard is already out of the lineup and the Boston Bruins are already relying on guys to play more minutes in his absence, even though, you know, Savard hasn't been around the whole year. But a guy that you know, that I'm interested to see how he does is Tyler Seguin. He's going into the lineup.
Yeah.
He's 18 years old. He's very young. He's had a tough year, a tough rookie year. I'd like to get your take on what you guys think of the chances of the Bruins maybe, you know, I don't know, having to rely on him a little bit too much when he hasn't played that much in the playoffs, if at all.
Well, when you're putting him in, he's been a healthy scratch now for, what, 11 games or something like that, no playoff experience, and they're being forced to put him into the lineup, really, because of the loss of some of their forwards, including Patrice Bergeron. When you're losing a guy like Bergeron, who's playing against top forwards, can check anybody in the league, he's one of their leading producers, and he's huge on the power play. Sagan's probably coming in thinking, I have to perform.
Yeah.
And he's, as you said, 18. And how is he going to perform? He's going to make mistakes.
Right.
This isn't, you saw how he struggled in the regular season, and this ain't no regular season. This is the playoffs, and not only the playoffs, it is the Eastern Conference Final. He is going to have a very hard time. And if this kid does manage to shine, it's going to do so much for his confidence heading into next season. But at the same time, if he struggles and he does something that's detrimental to, a win, like turn over the puck, because of just inexperience, it could kill him.
I think there's going to be a lot of factors will also determine the series, like any series. I mean, it'll come down to what goalie plays better and whose special teams are going and all of that. But when it comes to matchups and you know, Richie, who's not here right now, he always mentions the matchups. When you get into matchups and like you said, Leah, when you talk about Tyler Seguin and how he's stepping in, you know, he's not directly stepping in for Patrice Bergeron, but he is going to fill a
scoring role.
Everybody's
getting bumped up, so he's
exactly.
Yeah.
And you have to think that whatever happens in the series, that the way he plays is going to have a pretty large impact, because you're not replacing Bergeron, but you're putting Seguin in the lineup. To you want him to contribute.
I mean, he'll be a third line. He'll be the third line. I think they're putting him in at third line.
He'll probably slot into a third line. But, you know, when you talk about Patrice Bergeron, that's your top penalty killer,
yes.
Your top power play
guy.
He
does everything.
And so when you look at the role that Seguin's going to have to play and the role that other players, you know, whether it's how well, you know, Milan Lucic plays or whatever, those guys that's been their top line. But it's going to be tough. And I just wanted to mention, too, quickly that Adam McQuaid, defenseman for the Bruins, will be in the lineup. That was reported yesterday. And he was injured. I think he was checking. It was either Mezeros or Carl, but he was injured in the Philly series, so he'll be in the lineup. So the Bruins do get some, you know, healthy bodies back on defense, but I don't know about the Bruins without Bergeron. I mean, I think if you have Bergeron in the lineup, it's a very close series. But I'm going with the Lightning. You know, I guess I'm giving my predictions now. I guess we'll get your guys' predictions too, but I'm going to go with the Lightning in seven, even though I think I would be surprised if it was, you know, even five because of the way the Lightning were playing against the Capitals. But I just think that without Patrice Bergeron in the lineup, I still think the Boston Bruins are a heck of a hockey team, but I just don't think... I think that when the series gets tough and you're getting into those matchups, I think they're really going to miss him. So I guess, Lee, I'll start with you. Who do you got in the series?
Well, you know, Tampa Bay Lightning, four straight years, no playoffs. Then they go to 103 points this season. They rally from a 3-1 deficit, and they haven't lost since April 20th. They're on a 7-game win streak, and they are rolling on every facet of the game. They are strong through the middle. Their defense is great. Their power play is kicking. Their PK is kicking, and they got that 41-year-old tender who's playing like he's a young boy of 30 again, let's say that. I love Tampa Bay, and the X factor for me is Guy Boucher. I think Guy Boucher...
Richie's going to be very happy to hear that.
He has everyone buying in to what the Tampa Bay Lightning are and what he wants them to be. And he has... When you can get a guy like Vinny LeCavalier to be playing the way he's supposed to play, because he's responding to Guy Boucher.
Yep.
And they are all talking about what a coach he is. And I think he is so intelligent. He has his team doing exactly what they want to do. And he's going to pounce on those matchups, as we were talking about. He's going to take advantage of the injuries in which Boston has, because he's a very intelligent coach. He was great with Hamilton in the American Hockey League. So, long story short, I guess, I'm going with the Lightning. There's no doubt in my mind that the Lightning are winning. I'm taking them in five.
See, wow. That I like that.
I'm taking
wow.
them in five.
That's I like.
I
how,
think
I like
that
you're standing
Boston
on that with
is. I think that Tampa Bay may lose the first game, or they may lose the second game. But after that, they're going to get that kick in their butt, and they're going to roll. They are just going to just, I think, dominate the Boston Bruins. And I think the Bruins are a very strong team.
Do we have someone putting this on the board, by the way? Do we have a board somewhere in here?
We'll record these and we'll post them on IlegalCurve.com.
Dave, who do you like?
I like the Bruins. Leah's kind of convinced me the other way. I might have to switch after all those very valid points. I'm like, I never gave any of that thought. Those are all great points. No, I think that the... I really think that Tim Thomas has got it locked down. He's just been so good. And, you know, those first two games that they lost to the Canadiens, I think that really was a gut check time for the team. And I think that, you know, I agree that Patrice Bergeron, the injury is really going to hurt the Bruins, like you said, especially in the faceoff circle. But I think that... I think Lucic is gonna step it up big time. I think that you've got the Chara. Cabrera's been invisible. I think he's been absolutely terrible the entire playoffs.
Brought him in to work the power play.
Well, that's the point. He's supposed to be this power play specialist. Supposed to be your quarterback on the power play, and he hasn't been. I'm a little bit concerned about Chara too, because I actually think Chara has been, because I think mentally, I think he's almost worried about hurting people.
Chara keep up with Martin St. Louis too? Because he's going to have to strap him down.
Yeah.
Do you think Chara can handle that?
Difference there.
Yeah, at least. So, you know,
got to catch him.
I think it'll be really close.
Marty St. Louis just go on, like, in between Chara's legs?
yeah, probably. It's like the little guy going through the
little
giant
escapades.
Legs. Yeah, but my prediction would be the Bruins in seven. Because I really think this series is going long. I think, like Leah said, I think they're going to split.
Well, hey, Dave, you went 4-for-4 last round.
I'm a little bit intimidated now.
I'm
not going to say that's not a good pick, right?
So, I mean, you kind of have to be going with mine. But,
okay, guys, so we're going to go to break right now. We've got our Eastern Conference final predictions. We actually have to still do our Western Conference predictions. We'll do that after we have our two guests on. Coming out, we'll go to break, and then about 3 minutes from now, Ari Baum-Cohn, he's in Toronto. He's our gambling expert. We'll call him, have him on, and we're going to talk about odds for the two series in the Stanley Cup Finals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Ari Baum-Cohn, our Illegal Curve gambling expert. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ez. Thanks, guys.
You're in Toronto, right?
I am.
Okay, because I emailed you and then I awkwardly didn't get a response, so I wasn't sure. So
that happens a lot, Ayaz.
So we're going to have you on right now for a segment, a nice little segment, to talk about a little bit about the odds and to handicap some of the odds for us. Can you quickly give us the current series odds for the two conference finals matchups?
Yeah, sure, Ez. Just before I do that, I just wanted to say a couple things about odds. So odds, really, it's just a way to express the probability of an event occurring. So you can express the same thing in different ways. So you can do decimal odds, like you have in Proline. Then you have American odds, like you see on, you know, with the score when you're watching the rolling scores and they give the odds. And those are just all different ways of expressing a percentage likelihood that a team is going to win.
And what are the current odds right now for the Boston-Tampa series and the Vancouver-San Jose series?
Yeah, thanks, Ez. The series odds, I noticed that both of you and Leah had picked Tampa Bay, and I wonder if you think that Tampa Bay should be favored or if you just think that they're going to win. And as far as the series odds, Boston is minus 135, Tampa is plus 122 to win. And as far as percentages, to win the series, that means that oddsmakers are giving the Bruins about a 56% chance to win the series.
Right, Ari, and that obviously is very close. That's not, that doesn't put
those
tons of...
Those are staggering odds,
those are not
right?
staggering odds, and you'd have to think that if you're picking Tampa, you're not picking the favorite, but you're also not picking a favorite, the underdog, who's that much of an underdog, right?
Right, it's, you know, oddsmakers are predicting that it will be a close series.
Which it probably will be, except when Tampa wins in five.
I heard a Tampa Bay in five.
Ari, Lee's going to ask you a question here, but who do you like in this series?
Well, I mean, I tend to trust the oddsmakers.
By statistics.
I know it's lame, but, you know, if the oddsmakers have Boston in favor, then that's probably the team that's going to win.
All right, so
56% of the time.
What are the different odds for each of the teams left to win the Stanley Cup, and how have those odds changed since the puck dropped on the playoffs over a month ago?
That's also a good question. Predictably, the Canucks are the favorite. Plus 194, that's about a 34% chance of Vancouver bringing home the Cup. After Vancouver, you have the Bruins at plus 300, which is 25% chance of winning the Cup. You have San Jose at plus 335, 23%. And finally, Tampa's, they're not really long shots. They're only plus 435, but that's about an 18% chance of winning the Cup.
Hey, Ari, it's Dave here.
Hi, Dave.
How's it going? Okay, we got Detroit came close to obviously becoming the fourth team in Stanley Cup history to come back from a 3-0 deficit. Are you surprised that we've only seen two teams come so close to pulling off in 1 year, considering that the odds are so low to even get into that situation?
Well, Dave, I'm glad you asked me that. It's something that drives me crazy. So do you know what's harder than winning four games in a row in the playoffs?
No.
Well, winning five games in a row in the playoffs.
Okay.
The reason that a lot of teams go down 3-0 and lose is because the bad teams are the teams that are more likely to go down 3-0. And,
okay.
I hear it when I heard sort of Leah mention it earlier. I hear it when I talk to people all the time. It's almost like there's apparently something magical about that seventh game. Like, it's so hard to win four games in a row. But, if you look at the numbers, and it's easy to figure out the odds of a team coming back from 3-0, especially after the series, because what you do is you take game four, the odds for them to win game four, game five, game six, and game seven, and you multiply them together.
Mm-hmm. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ari Baum-Cohen, our resident gambling expert. I have a question for you. This is a little bit off topic about what we were talking about, but have you come across a website, or maybe you've come across a few websites that are actually handicapping the odds of Winnipeg getting an NHL team back?
I haven't seen that, but that would be a great idea for a proposition. I mean, websites have all kinds of interesting propositions. How long Roger Clemens will go to jail, just any kinds of propositions, how many penalty minutes Douglas Murray will have in a game. And I'm surprised, actually, that some sites haven't put that up yet.
So, Ari, can you explain to our listeners, because, some people aren't really into online gambling and stuff like that. What are some sites where you can put money down on odd kind of stats like that, and how does that work?
Okay, well, what you're talking about is proposition betting.
Right.
It's up to the different sites to sort of have any propositions that they think will attract bettors. I'm not sure if you want me to go ahead and mention internet sportsbooks by name now, but I'm happy to if you give me the go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the ones that you would use?
Well, there are some that seem to cater more to Canadians. I know that Bet365 is a sponsor of some teams in the CFL. Bodog seems to cater to Canadians. Five Dimes has some interesting props also. But unfortunately, hockey just doesn't get the attention from the public and from bettors that other sports get. So you don't have as many interesting props.
So Ari, I'll have to, I guess, look into some of those sites and see if anybody will take my money if the Jets will come back, because I'd be willing to probably put down a minimum of, $25.
Well, Ezra, I mean there are sites, they're called betting exchanges, and if you actually email them your idea for a market, they'll sometimes post it.
Okay.
So you email a site called Matchbook. And you say, look, can you put a market on whether the Jets will come back? And they'll do it, and then it's up to you and anyone else that's interested to set the odds for that market.
All right, Ari, you already told us in the East you got Boston because they are statistically supposed to win this series. So who do you got in the West?
All right, well,
it's
got to
be Vancouver, right?
Vancouver is the favorite. They're being given a 62% chance by oddsmakers to win the series. And I mean, if
I feel like you're about to go off the board, Ari.
I mean, they haven't. Have they played their best hockey yet?
So you're going with the 38%?
Well, I mean, who do I think is going to win the series? You know, I think that Vancouver is going to win the series. But as far as, you know, would I put money down on San Jose having a 38% chance to win the series? Why not? Why not put, you know, $10 down and see what happens?
Once again, Ari, every time you come on, I'll ask you this. If you're willing to lend me $100, I will bet on the Vancouver Canucks.
I've heard this from you so many times.
I guess the offer is still no. No, but we appreciate you coming on because I think that, you know, everyone is looking forward to, you know, the third round starting tonight at 7 between Boston and Tampa. And you know, it's interesting to get your take on the gambling world and especially, you know, prop betting because I think, you know, we're going to have, you know, Tim Campbell on at 10 and Darren Ford on later and to talk about the whole possible return of the NHL to Winnipeg. And I think there's some people that would like to put their money where their mouth is because a lot of people think it's going to happen. A lot of people think it might not happen, so... It's interesting. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Ari.
Thanks, Ari.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, guys,
get your bets in.
Once again, if you guys are also willing to lend me money, I'll always gamble someone else's money.
I hate statistics. Yeah. I don't put a lot of merit behind them.
Well, Ari's really good. Like
I mean, statistics are good. You're right.
But sometimes they can be used to. You can usually find something to prove.
That's the beauty of sports. There is the will to win, which can make a team just go Tampa in five over the favored statistical Boston.
We'll see. We'll see at the end of the third round if you're right.
Well, you know what they say: where there's a Will Smith, there's a way. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Last segment, you heard from Ari Baum-Cohn in Toronto. He's our resident gambling expert, and we talked odds. And
my brain hurts after trying to
get around.
Listen to all, yeah, to wrap my head around what he was talking about when it comes to math.
You know, I know that before the playoffs started, and you know, Ari mentioned this too. And I mean, Vancouver's odds to win the Cup were actually they had Vancouver's odds at 2-1, and that was pretty high. And you know, if anything, those odds have gotten better. I think after Vancouver, you know, got through Chicago, I think that it was nobody. Let's put it this way: nobody's dethroned them as the favorite right now. I don't think you could say
any
other team is the favorite. Maybe someone thinks that San Jose's got a lot of momentum coming out of that Game 7, but
namely myself,
you'd still have to think that Vancouver is the odds-on favorite. So we're just waiting to get a hold of Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press. We're having a little bit of difficulty getting a hold of him.
Why don't we do our Western Conference?
Yeah. So what we'll do is we'll go to the Western Conference Finals. Our picks right now. We previewed it a little bit, but I guess I'll start with you, Leah. Mm-hmm. Who do you like in the series? And then just explain why you like your team. And I guess we last you know segment you kind of hinted that it was going to be Vancouver, but.
I didn't.
No, she never gave that away.
Okay, maybe I thought you were hinting.
No. I'm a mysterious woman, as is what I am. No, honestly, I'm taking Sharks in six.
Ooh.
Wow.
I am.
Put
and people are going to boo me and whatnot and everything else. But the fact of the matter is I think they're very strong down the middle. Not that Vancouver isn't, but their players haven't shown up yet. So I'm waiting for the Sedins to make their mark. They're going to challenge Vancouver's defense. The guys like Thornton, Pavelski, Couture, they combined for 29 points in two rounds. That's not bad. It's also going to put a lot of pressure on the Sedins to perform, and I haven't seen them be pressure players. Let's not just say this playoffs, but ever. Niemi, I'm going to take him over Luongo in the goaltending battle. I think he's been absolutely brilliant, especially in the last two games. 38 of 40 he saved. In Game 7, I think he's just going to do it. Like, let's face it, he's never lost a playoff series.
I think in that Game 7...
And he's got a Stanley Cup ring.
You could actually see that he stole that game.
He's ready.
Well, you can't deny that they were bad. The Sharks were outplayed in that game.
You know what? That second period, it was funny, actually, because I was talking to someone about the Sharks game, and it was right between the second and third intermission, and they thought the game was over. because that second period, the last 6 minutes of that second period, felt like a third period.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like Detroit was down 2-1, and they were trying so hard to tie it, and it actually felt like that was the third period of the game, and that was going to be the conclusion. And, of course, we know that, you know, San Jose went on to win, but...
You know what the biggest thing is for me, the reason I'm picking the Sharks, and I'll just say this really quickly. I was watching some interviews yesterday from the Sharks, just some post-game interviews after Vancouver, and Joe Thornton looked very calm. He just stood there in that very subdued way that he does, and he just say, yeah, we're glad we won the series, but we have bigger and better things to do, and that's the point. And he just seemed like... He's going to win a Stanley Cup. Well, it just, there was something about this team that
you
just...
You feel it.
I feel it. And I don't know, as deep as Vancouver is, I just don't know if they have, and I'm going to say this, and I know people hate it when I criticize the Canucks, I don't like them. I don't love their heart. I don't know where it is. I think they're just a bunch of talented guys, and there's a couple key role guys, but I just feel like there isn't the heart and the want that there is in San Jose, because they've been so close. They're supposed to do it every year, and they never do, and I just think that this is their year.
So, Leah, let me ask you this question. So you're obviously picking the Sharks in six.
Yes. I might be thinking more of my heart than my head.
Do you believe, though, that whether it's the pairing of Douglas Murray and Dan Boyle, which mm-hmm. they have to be the guys that are going to shut down Kessler, because you'd have to think that if they're not, they're probably going to shut down probably the Sedin line too. But do you think that matchup, and then also when you look at the second matchup, would also be, you're looking at Mark Edward Vlasic too as well, is going to be responsible for shutting down Kessler? Because let's be honest, in the last series, Shea Weber and Ryan Suter, They shut down the Sedins.
Yes.
But nobody could stop Kessler to run around. Nobody could stop Kessler. Yeah. So do you think that...
I think that the Sharks are a deeper team than Nashville. I think that they're going to handle them. I think they're going to be able to shut these players down. Not completely, but we also have to remember, we're starting to get deep into the playoffs. Yep. Kessler was great in that series. We don't know what's going to happen, if he's going to show up again like that in this series. It takes a lot out of a player. It might be somebody else's time to step up, because whether or not Kessler can do it two series like that in a row, like Barry Trotz said, he's never seen a playoff performance like that.
Dave, you'd have to think that Vancouver as a team, whether it's, you know, the management or the coaches, they don't want Kessler to have to do that again in the third round.
Oh, sorry, Dave. Oh, that was for you.
No, it's okay.
Leah, I looked at you, then I said,
no,
Dave, I just wanted to make
up and saying, no,
I just wanted
you're right
to know that you could also participate after Dave spoke.
Evidently, I forgot I was actually part of the show. I actually zoned out, and I was like thinking about things in my head. I was like, oh, I forgot I was actually on the show.
Well, Tim is actually sleeping right now with a blanket over him.
Yeah,
so
Tim's
just kidding, Tim.
So, let's.
Well, as far as the Vancouver Canucks and their chances in the series, and do you think that they want the Sedins to play better, but you have to think that the Vancouver Canucks, and especially coach, you know, Vigneault and assistant coach Rick Bowness and those guys, they have to want other guys to step up, and they probably, in just specifically Kessler, they don't want Ryan Kessler to think that he has to do everything.
Yeah,
he is good at doing everything.
Well, he's been phenomenal. Like, I just can't get over how good he's played, and but you have to, because like you're worried. I'm with Leon on this one. Like, I'm concerned about Luongo. Like, every once in a while he gives up these fluky weird goals, and you're like, what's in it?
Right, but
I like
arguably
Luongo.
The greatest. You have to keep in mind though, with Luongo, he doesn't have once a year he'll have a collapse. Mm-hmm. But just like Marty Brodeur. My second favorite goalie to Ron Hextall.
I'm a big Marty Brodeur fan, too.
He is arguably the best goalie of all time. He has all the records. And he's the type of goalie, too, that lets in goals. He'll have an amazing game. He'll shut out. He'll look like he's almost like...
He rebounds
blindfolded.
Well.
But he rebounds well.
Yeah.
And you have to think that... I see what you're saying, Dave, but are you of that opinion, because you think that maybe... Because
against Niemi, you don't have time to rebound.
Yeah.
If Niemi plays the way he can.
Yeah, I actually am not concerned. I don't think it's going to come down to goaltending in this series.
I think
it's going to be the Sharks.
But if you had to give the edge, it would be probably to Niemi.
No. I actually would say they're fairly close. Like, right. It's hard to say that, I mean, Luongo won the gold medal, right?
So he's a Vezina candidate.
I mean,
come on. He's
really
great.
He's not going to... You know, he's not a slouch. He's not exactly. It's not like you're playing with a scrub.
He'll be
in
fine.
Net. So I'm not worried about Luongo at all. I'm more concerned about the Sharks forwards. If I'm Vancouver, I think the Sharks forwards are firing on all. And actually, I don't even think they're firing on all cylinders, because I think, like Leah said in the last round, Marlowe's not even playing that well. He's about to pick it up. I actually think Heatley's been the worst shark for period. Mm-hmm. I think he's been absolutely invisible. I mean, he's the guy.
It's vacant. They need,
yeah, and he's the guy. And again, I think
he's hurt.
Because he was Cronwald, mm-hmm. I think he, you know, is probably not. He's playing with an injury.
And this is the one thing. We talk about Kessler, and you can't rely solely on Kessler. We know that mm-hmm. because not one player can win a game. But this is the thing. When the Sharks have maybe certain players that aren't performing, they do have other players. They have that depth to come up. They've talked about how deep Vancouver is this year. But you look at it, if Kessler ends up being shut down, the Sedins don't pick it up, who's stepping up? Who's stepping up on the Canucks? Because I don't have any names that jump out at me as somebody who can do that, somebody mm-hmm. who has it within them.
Yeah.
And that's my problem with the Vancouver Canucks, and yeah. it always has been, is that I don't feel it. I don't yeah. look and say, oh, well, this guy, they're supposed to be this great, deep team, and as a unit, they're great when their top guns are firing.
Right.
But when they're not, I look down that roster, and I don't see anybody who's going to be like a Kessler and put the team on his back and be able to make them win. I can look down San Jose, yeah. and I can find a few guys. And I'm just a little concerned about that when it comes to the Canucks, and that's why I feel the Sharks have the edge. If the Sedins don't awake,
yeah.
and if Kessler gets shut down.
That's the big question. That's the intangible, right? Mm-hmm. Like, will the Sedins
If the Sedins wake up,
yeah.
Vancouver should have this series.
And Leah, I have to agree with you, too, because I think when people are looking at the Canucks, now we're in the third round. Now, you know, now it's crunch time. It's serious business now. When you look at the Vancouver Canucks, when you're looking at this series, you're thinking, okay, San Jose's coming off of just a huge Game 7 win. Mm-hmm. They could have easily lost that series.
And a very physical series.
And you look at the Canucks and you say, okay, the Sedins haven't played well, and you've got Henrik Sedin wearing the C on his chest, and when you're at this point in the playoffs, you want a guy to not only, you know, lead the team, whether that's in a, you know, in the dressing room, but you want a guy to go out there and lead
make
by example
and
make the and,
make
and
the
lay
big
the
play.
Big hit
or
do something to establish and establish dominance or whatever you want to call it, establish something that's going to set the
yeah.
tone, right? And it's been Kessler, and I think that the problem with that isn't a question of, you know, who has the C on their chest. It's just that offensively, the Sedins have been, along with Kessler, leading that team. And the thing is, you won't find a team that's ever won the Stanley Cup that's one guy's led them. Yeah, of course, in the 80s, Gretzky was leading the Oilers, but he had a supporting cast around him.
You guys, his supporting cast was unreal.
That was also a different era, but I'd have to agree. I mean, I mean, Dave, first, let's get your prediction first, and then I'll give my prediction.
I think we need to talk about the fact that you're a Kessler bunny. I think, like, I'm actually questioning whether you're wearing, like, Ryan Kessler underwear right now.
No, if you listen to the show earlier, like, very early on this year, I was talking about him, you know, and how he might be one of the best all-around players in the NHL.
Yeah,
him and Datsyuk,
I think. You hate him, but you want him on your team. That's the thing about Kessler, is that when my team's playing against him, I just hate him.
Who's that guy that was just waving at me, by the way?
I don't know.
Somebody just walked by the studio and waved at me.
Maybe
I waved
Tim
back.
Campbell.
Well, you
maybe
waved back, though, so I mean, that's even worse.
Is that Tim Campbell?
Anyways, you know what? The Sharks are my Charlie Brown team. I take them every year.
What do you mean by that?
Well, let me explain what I mean by that.
Go on.
I take them every year. And every year, I think I'm going to kick. They're gonna win the cup. So every year, I think I'm going to kick. Like, Lucy's got the ball. Charlie Brown's a little bit of an older reference, maybe, but like, she's got the ball down. He thinks he's going to be able to kick it, and he, you know, no problem. She pulls the ball away.
You lost me, Dave.
I know. Apparently, well, the older listeners might understand. But the point is that the Sharks every year, I think that they're going to do something. For the last three or four years,
I get you.
I've gone with the Sharks, and I think that this is the year they're going to do it. And, you know, they're great in the regular season, and they're going to pick it up in the playoffs. And especially Joe Thornton. I take him because I have, like, I have so much confidence in him. I think he's, every playoffs, I'm like, this guy's going to step up. He's going to be the player that he is, which is, like, he's just phenomenal. I mean, like, he elevates people's game, right? So that's what I think he's going to do. And he hasn't done it previously to any great degree. I mean, obviously they got to the finals, the conference finals last year. But
so are you joining Leah and taking the Sharks?
What's that?
Are you taking the Sharks?
Oh, yeah, I'm taking the Sharks in seven.
Ooh, another tough prediction.
So the question is, who are you taking in the Western Conference Final?
I'm going to give my prediction right now, and this is not going to be any different than what most people are predicting. And I'll tell you why I think Vancouver is going to win, just quickly. I'm going to take Vancouver in seven, but I think that the Vancouver Canucks are going to take their game to a level that they started. If you look at the Nashville series, the Sedins, even though they didn't get going, and I mean, I think everyone by this point is tired of hearing. I didn't think the Sedins played well, but I also didn't think that their play didn't make the team play. You know,
well, they still in playoff scoring.
Right.
It's not like they're you know,
but
disappeared
him,
and I'd be
the thing is exactly. You'd think that by the way the series is analyzed in the media that Henrik Sedin and Daniel Sedin have a combined 5 points, but they each aren't doing that bad. But I'm going to take Vancouver because I think Longo's going to be, you know, he'll play well enough to get them to the next round. And I think that, you know, I think Ryan Kesler is, you know, he's going to continue playing the way he's going to play. And I think he's going to frustrate everyone. We're going to see more of what we saw in the Nashville series. It's going to be, I'm not taking Vancouver in five or anything, but I still think Vancouver is, you know, they're a little bit more rested than San Jose. And, you know, I think this is their year. I think the Canucks, this is a team that's, they've built this team for how many years? This is 6 years in the works. And obviously the last 2 years didn't work out getting beat by Chicago. But I think, you know, I think everything's going to come into place. And, I mean, they're going to get there. So, you know, Vancouver, Tampa.
So you're calling Vancouver in what? You didn't say what prediction?
Seven.
Oh, you said in seven?
Vancouver in seven, but.
I wasn't listening.
I still have Tampa to win the cup, though.
Oh. Interesting. This is a 2004 moment.
They're going to come very close.
This will be a 2004 moment.
It could be the year that the Eastern Conference Final actually takes the Stanley Cup, because it's been a bit. It's been a bit with Detroit and Chicago and, you know, Chicago,
well,
apparently
Pittsburgh.
All of a sudden.
Pittsburgh,
that's true. Yeah, Pittsburgh a couple years ago. That's right.
Do you say Calgary or Calgary?
Well, somebody told me it's Calgary.
Yeah.
Like, but I'm like, well, then why is it spelled Gary at the end? My sister lives there, and she's always telling me it's Calgary.
Is that the way they pronounce it in Brandon? Like, I don't know, like...
Brendon?
We do a lot of different things.
What are we doing? Is this a phonetics lesson?
Apparently.
We once again, we're having... sorry, Leah, did you want to say something?
No, I just...
Or did you want to just
strike anybody,
me?
No, but is anybody at all thinking about how much the Sharks are going to bang around the Canucks?
Yeah, the size of the Sharks is big.
I'm just thinking about Rafi Torres. He has to be smart and stay out
of the box.
This is the thing. I'm just thinking back to when Thornton kind of rubbed out. I don't know if it was Zetterberg or somebody. And these are massive guys. And I remember this replay. And it's just every single shift in that Detroit-San Jose series was so physical. I know people might say that's a detriment to them going in because they're going to be tired.
Yeah.
I don't think they're tired at all. San Jose is a bunch of big boys. They're a bunch of horses.
Yeah.
And they are going to buck in Vancouver come game one. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be a great series. I'm really excited for the Western Conference Final.
I think the Western Conference Final is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be absolutely
phenomenal. It might be the Western Conference Final might be what, too bad we couldn't see in the Stanley Cup.
But
you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly.
You watch these series and you're thinking this could be the Stanley
Cup
Finals.
This could be the Stanley Cup right now.
Okay, guys, let's leave it at that. Once again, we're going to try to get Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press on. We were supposed to have him on at the top of the hour, but we'll continue to get him. Darren Ford of JetsOwner.com is going to be joining us at 10:30. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's just before 20 after 10. My name is Ezra. I'm joined by Leah Hextall and Dave Manouk, filling in for Richie Pollock and Drew Mandel, and of course Michael Remus, who usually mans the R desk, but he is at www.illegalcurve.com.
He's manning it remotely.
He's manning the R desk remotely, so go there and check out our site and cover it live and chat if you want. So right now we're gonna start the Thrashers / Coyotes ownership talk. We're having a little trouble getting Tim Campbell of the Free Press on. So maybe we'll try to get him on later on in the show. It's going to be a little bit difficult because we still have three more guests coming up, including Darren Ford at 10:30. He's going to come on and talk to us about JetsOwner.com and kind of his thoughts on really the madness that has, enveloped the city. I mean, you can't go, not only can you not go anywhere without somebody talking about it, it's the type of topic that you can't, nobody will give a non-passionate response to, are we actually getting a team back? And, you know, we were talking about talking this a little bit before, but let's start off with before we talk about, you know, the actual return of the NHL, let's just talk about what happened in Glendale. Because on Tuesday night, This Glendale City Council, you know, voted 5-2 in favor of basically covering the losses for the Coyotes for next season. They covered the losses this year, operating losses of $25 million, and next year, the City Council agreed to cover the losses again. And, you know, as we know, the Coyotes don't sell out their arena and lose money every year. I think it was upwards of $40 million this past year.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the City Council meeting, and what are your general thoughts on, you know, Matthew Holsizer and the entire prospects of someone basically stepping up and writing the check to own that team?
It blew my mind, honestly. Like, I watched, I actually had like 8 things running at once. I was reading the Winnipeg Free Press chat.
I
was BBMing with you, of course.
I was BBMing with Leah.
Oh, you were BBMing with Leah.
She actually deleted me.
I did not.
I was watching it live on the Glendale website, as well as trying to watch the Red Wing Game 6 of the Red Wings Sharks game, and it was like a comedy of errors. Like I got lost in the Councillor Phil Lieberman talking about kosher deli, and he kept saying Italian restaurants, and he was going on and on. I mean, he was bloviating to like Drew Mandel type proportions.
You know what's funny? Richie said that his comment was Phil Lieberman is actually like a caricature of someone.
Yeah, he's not real.
He's not a real city councilor who like you'd think a politician would be all businesslike, and he's almost a comic book character, that guy. But go on.
You know. The thing I found to the most telling was the fact that if this deal is being done, like essentially we all knew it was a foregone conclusion. I don't want to say that my powers of prognostication came through again, because I did call that it would be a 5-2 vote, although I don't think that's anything legendary. But, you know, the interesting thing is, why is everybody who was behind this in terms of the private entity, mainly Holsizer and even Ice Edge, even though they're considered a minor, I think it was suggested that they were only going to have about a 5% stake in this. Why are they all of a sudden supposedly pulling out? Like, if you know this is about to get done, like, why is Ice Edge announcing, like, the vote happened on, it was Tuesday.
Yep.
And Ice Edge announced, was it
a couple of days after?
Yeah, no. I think
maybe the day after.
I actually thought it was before. I thought Chris Warren, they said it was either just before or after. I don't remember. But
Let's be honest. Ice Edge has released a lot of
fake press releases. No, but at the same time, like Holsizer still acknowledged that they're a part of his ownership group, and they've basically pulled out. Now you're thinking to yourself, why are they pulling out? Like if you know you're this close and you've fought for this for 2 years, why would you as you're about to cross the finish line? Why are you suddenly saying, you know what, I don't want to race anymore? I refuse to race. So that to me is a little bit suspect. And then the other thing is the word that we're hearing now that Holsizer is really PO'd with the Council of Glendale, and that he's talking about... Now, I mean, there's varying accounts. I've heard as many people deny that he's no longer interested as you've heard people deny that he is interested. So unless he says something, which of course he's not doing, all he's saying publicly is that his interest in keeping the Coyotes in Glendale remains. But I just don't see... It's just interesting to me that you hear all this talk of people pulling out after the team is saved, at least for a 1 year time span. So I find that highly suspect. And again, I don't see how this moves forward. I don't see how you're going to get a deal done that the Goldwater won't sue on. And if the deal is so rock solid, as I think even Councillor Lieberman might have said this, then move forward. Move forward with the deal and then let them sue you. And if they sue you and they lose... Then you know that, you know what I mean. If you have nothing to worry about a lawsuit, you know. Then I mean, obviously you always could lose because I mean, you're leaving it up to somebody else's. You're putting the power into somebody else's hands. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to realize that if you want to move this forward, you have to. And I just don't see how giving this one more year is going to do anything. I really don't. Anyways, that's my thought on it.
Well, the Goldwater Institute said that there still is a possibility of a lawsuit. It's still not out of the question. They said that they do need to look into what the city of Glendale is going to, you know, how they're going to do this. Because at the end of the day, the Arizona Constitution clearly bans subsidies to private businesses. So that's exactly what they're doing.
Right.
At the same time, though, is anybody surprised that they passed it?
No.
Phoenix was never coming here next year. I mean, it blows my mind that people thought that they were going to come here. And why I just, the basic thing is that their rink would sit empty.
Right.
It would cost them so much money, and this is what the mayor of Glendale, Elaine Scruggs, is saying when she talked at the city council meeting, is that this building will sit empty, and it will cost us more money than covering this $25 million debt, because we will have no residents in it, and it will sit vacant, and we will never have a resident in it, and we're just going to have this big building that's costing us twice as much as the $25 million, so we have to do this. Well, they were almost handcuffed into passing the vote, because it's going to be more detrimental to not have Phoenix there. And I don't want to hear about, oh, well, they could bring an AHL team. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. If they do not have an NHL resident in that building, they would have lost way more money. At the end of the day, it's economics. It's politics. The city was always going to give them the money. And the Goldwater Institute, I don't even think they really care anymore. I think they're done. I think they just kind of are like, yeah, we put our name out there. We did what we were supposed to do. We made things interesting. They're not going to sue. And I don't know if this deal is going to get done. I agree with you, Dave, there. I don't know what's going to happen. But at the end of the day, Gary Bettman was never moving that team. They were going to, even if the city council didn't pass it, there would have been something that would have gone on.
I do disagree with you on that one, Leah. I think that if the city wasn't going to cover the $25 million, there was no way the owners were covering.
No, you guys have to understand something here. This is all about Gary Bettman's ego. Whenever anybody talks about this Sunbelt situation to me, I get so irate. This is his faltering legacy. His mantra when he came in by the owners was to grow it in non-traditional markets in the Sun Belt, which he did. There has been some success. There hasn't been some success. Gary Bettman is so full of ego. He is the most egocentric man you're ever going to see out there. And he's making the money hand over fist. And the fact of the matter is he feels that these teams are his legacy. And if he moves them, then that's a hit to him. And he's so egocentrical. And that is why he doesn't want to move to certain markets. He wants to stay in certain places. And people have to understand, at the end of the day, no matter what happens politically, no matter what happens with owners going to teams, the NHL Board of Governors has to pass it, and Gary Bettman is never going to do that.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, he makes the money. At the end
Absolutely.
Of the day, he's making the money.
And that's the most important thing.
But, you know, like, I guess the key point you hit on, which I think is really important for people to realize, is you're right, there's no anchor tenant. If Phoenix leaves, there's no anchor tenant. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Atlanta, and the reality is,
and
the Hawks.
They draw.
First of all, they draw and they make money.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, that's why losing the Hawks. I mean, losing the Thrashers. Would be bad because, of course, you're losing 40 nights. But the question is, can they fill those 40 nights? Whereas with Jobbing.com, you know, again, you look at the MTS Center, third busiest arena in Canada, behind the Rogers Center and
Bell Center.
I think it's busier than Bell. Air Canada and Rogers. And it's the 27th in North America. Well, I can tell you, Winnipeg is clearly not the 27th busiest, largest city in North America.
No.
But the fact is that at one point it was actually the 13th busiest in North America. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you know,
it was the first to hit the 1 mil mark too. They did it faster than any.
That's right. But my point is that Jobbing.com, I mean, the irony is that they're going to pay like $97.5 million for management, and maybe they need to because they have no management. If you look at their events right now for the summer, They have almost nothing. I think there's like a Britney Spears concert, which I think Ezra's going to, in August. But aside from that, there's very minimal. Because the problem is, there's so many other venues. That's the thing. In Phoenix, there's tons of other venues. If you want to have a huge concert where you're going to play at, you know, Sun Devil Stadium or something like that. So, you know, there's so many other options for places to, you know, hold a concert, hold new other things. Ezra's pointing at me. I think he needs something.
Dave, we're going to have to leave it at that because we're going to have Darren Ford on right after the break, so we're going to take a quick 3-minute break, and when we come back, JetsOwner.com founder Darren Ford, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.